Bell. 7 past 1, we welcome Jeff Potter from Friedman, Lurie, Singh and D'Angelo Lawyers. G'day, Jeff.
Hi, Peter.
Last time I spoke to you was, well, actually a little bit before Christmas, and I think you were taking your family on a bit of a vacation around the world. How was it?
Oh, it was excellent.
Yeah?
Yes.
Where did you go?
Oh, I went to Paris and London and New York, saw bits of the United States. Very interesting.
Unreal. And your boys, you've got two boys there, 17 and 16. What do they think of the trip?
Oh, they loved it, I think, yeah. Weren't too hot about Vegas because they're a bit young for that. But the rest of the time, yeah, they loved it.
They might change their tune in 5 or 6 years, each of them.
Yeah, 21. I think so. Yeah. And we got back without killing each other, which was good.
Yeah, good. So how long all up were you travelling?
Oh, we were overseas for 8 weeks.
Okay. Expensive while you're over there, or not really, considering that we live in Perth, which apparently is very expensive?
Well, no, I wouldn't say it was that expensive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clothes are cheap in the US, which is good. So I came back with some extra cases and all that. So
okay, well, we don't have you on to be our travel guest, although I always find it very interesting, other people's experiences. We have you on because you are a lawyer with Friedman, Lurie, Singh and D'Angelo Lawyers. You specialise in personal injury, medical negligence, those sorts of issues. So if you've got a question for Jeff Potter, 9221882 is the talkback number. We're here to take your questions. I just wanted to ask you, back to the travel, it's one of those dilemmas that I find myself in. Do you go out and get travel insurance every time that you travel?
Oh, I think everyone, you need travel insurance. It's just, it's interesting when people don't have it because you think, well, you're spending all this money on a holiday. Why not just take a bit of extra, you know, insurance, a bit of extra security?
I use the travel insurance that apparently with my credit card, if I book and pay for the holiday, I've read that it's automatic. So I've read the fine print and we're comfortable with that. I've never had to call on my travel insurance policy, but what about yourself?
Well, I've asked a higher authority, like an appeal court, about that, which obviously is my father, and he's my parents are obviously a bit older than me, and they travel quite a bit, and they've had occasion to claim a couple of times on just, I think it's the credit card, as it were, and they've had no problems.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean that's not what I took last time, and we had to claim on ours for a little sum. But I think it sounds like it's a pretty good industry, the travel insurance industry, because most people are pretty relaxed and they don't do mad things and they don't get injured.
I've had this conversation with a few people lately. I'm just asking your opinion, and they are professionals, intelligent people, successful people, I think in the main quite wealthy people, who are dead set against any type of insurance at all, with the exception, I think, of professional indemnity. I think so. They take that, but they don't believe in car insurance, house insurance, contents insurance, all those sorts of travel insurance. I guess they don't believe in. They just think, oh well, for the amount of money that I'm going to pay over a 60-year lifetime, if I do have a claim on my house, for example, probably going to be about the same amount. That's what their belief is.
Well,
I'm not advocating this, by the way, people.
Depends how you live your life.
Yeah,
but. I have a similar discussion with clients about private health insurance sometimes. And the problem is that you can never spend the money, because if you assume that the premium for your insurance is $1,500 a year, say it's $2,000, so I could do the maths, say, okay, well, look, over 20 years, I'm going to save $40,000, a hip replacement might only be $15,000. But you can actually never spend the money because you might need to spend it on the treatment. So then the question becomes, well, how much interest will you earn on it?
Yeah.
And will the interest exceed the increase in the healthcare costs, and it won't. So it's actually illogical from a financial perspective because you can never spend the money.
Yeah, I must admit to being a little bit surprised when people were espousing those theories. Now, we're talking about, in particular, Jeff's area of expertise is personal injury, medical negligence. By all means, give us a call on other matters. I'm sure Jeff can give some very general advice on those as well. 9221882, Shane in Maylands. Hi, Shane.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Okay, next Monday I'm doing court, but I placed a misconduct order.
Right.
I'm wondering what happened if the other person doesn't turn up.
Okay, Jeff, probably not your sort of area of expertise, but it couldn't. What would they do in that situation, do you think?
Well, it depends what the order is. Yeah. There are so many different things. It could be dismissed or it could be adjourned. And
Look, probably not Jeff's area there, Shane. Sorry we can't help you a little more with that one. But probably either adjourned or dismissed, but perhaps just go along anyway and find out for yourself.
Maybe a legal aid lawyer there.
Yeah.
A quick word.
That'll be the best course of action for you to take. To Mark in Padbury. G'day, Mark.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
We're well.
Yeah, good. Just a quick question. How do I go, seeing my company will no longer put me through a first aid course, how do I go under the Good Samaritan Act if I actually try and help somebody in the workplace with an injury? Is there any, if I have an injury in the workplace?
Okay. So formally, yeah. Was your employer happy to put you through a first aid course?
Yeah, they put us through to a higher level, and they've decided now they want to save the money and not do that any longer. So if I was to help in a situation and I do something I'm no longer qualified to do, I understand from what I've tried to read that the Good Samaritan Act covers, you know, people in the street and that type of thing, but I don't know how it goes in the workplace.
Jeff, you got a response on that one, or again?
No, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's just a question of reasonableness.
Yeah,
I mean, we could talk for hours on it, but fundamentally it's a question of reasonableness. If you think you're up to the task, well, you know, and it's an emergency situation or something, well, then obviously no one's going to hold you, you know, if your certificate's 2 months out of date or something. But on the other hand, if your first day certificate was when you were, you know, in the under 10 scouts and you're 55 and things have changed a bit.
I think the situation would be, I don't think anyone who needs first aid is going to be too upset if it's particularly an emergency, if you've done your very best to help them, and that's what we're talking about. I guess if you have a choice, Mark, and there's other people in the workplace that have got a current first aid certificate in place, you might defer and let them take over. But look, I think if your intentions are right, and look, you've obviously been trained in them to some respect, I think you're pretty safe there.
A bit harsh by the employer, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the bigger question out of your question, Mark. Sorry, we couldn't be more exact with that one as well. It is a bit harsh. I wonder. Yeah, I would have thought that it'd be a good practice for most workplaces to cover the costs of first aid for training for their employees.
Well, yeah, I would have thought the workers' comp insurer should pay for it, to be honest, because I've had cases where if there was first aid applied earlier, the extent of the disability would have been less, and treatment costs, etc., which the insurer's paying for.
Mark, that might be worth your time to just go and do a little bit of investigation on those sort of matters, and you might be able to come up with a solution to that current problem that you are in. Jeff, wanted to ask you over the Christmas break, I guess, Christmas early into the new year, there was that case down at the train station there where a number of people fell out. I think they were rushing for a train, as I'm only picking up bits and pieces, but fell over and a few people got squashed.
I'm becoming an expert on this.
And injured. Yeah. And that's exactly the sort of case that you would be involved in. There were some injuries there.
A number of people have rung me about
okay, so that is
incident.
Yeah. Okay.
It's interesting, actually, because it shows just how much power consumers have. Because I did a bit of research in relation to this on the internet, and places like WA Today have fantastic websites, and a lot of feedback, and I just spent a couple of hours reading through everything, and there's lots and lots of witnesses. It's incredible how you can learn so much now about incidents such as that. You know, I'm still waiting for the witnesses to actually call me.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's quite interesting how you read through the sequential replies over about 3 days after the incident.
Okay.
And they actually show you all these different perspectives as to what the layperson says should have been done better, which is reasonableness, which is what lawyers want. And so it's given me an enormous amount of information for those cases.
And that evidence would be persuasive in whatever sort of, wherever it progresses. You could say, well, look, here's some, would that be enough, those sort of accounts? Or, I mean, obviously it'd be better if you actually contacted them and they'd put together a statement, but can you put together a lot better picture because of those sort of posts, if you like?
Absolutely, because... Yeah. What happens with lots of injuries is the people who are injured don't actually know what happened. But looking at those websites, I've been able to build up a picture that there was certain events that took place beforehand. Because I came back essentially just after holiday, sort of exhausted. This happened early in February, and you know, I didn't even know it had happened until the first client rang up. And then as I looked at the websites, it was clear there was a major event on. You know, there was a lot of people going to go to the train station. There seemed to be no awareness by the public transport authority that there were going to be lots of people there. And then one of the clinches, I think, is that they seem to just say, wave people down the escalators, saying, oh, don't bother getting a ticket, you know, just get on the trains, you know, it's all covered, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, we'll come back to this one because we'll use it as a bit of a prototype about what the appropriate course of action if you've suffered an injury in a public place and what exactly some of the remedies might be. We'll revisit this, but quickly, Steve in Queens Rock would like to ask you a question. G'day, Steve.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. But mine is about life insurance and duty of disclosure. I've had a life insurance policy for many years through my superannuation fund. And 2010, I got lymphoma. I'm in remission now, have been since the end of 2010. And I was just wondering, was I supposed to tell them? Or I'm in remission, have been for 4 years. Do I just keep going along? And if I do disclose it to them, is there anything stopping them from saying, well, hang on now, you're a bad risk now, you're off?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Jeff, you got a response for Steve?
It's a bit out of my area. Yeah, yeah. Generally speaking, you should disclose anything that you think might be relevant to the insurer and whether they want to take a policy. He'd have to check with someone. I'd have to do some research on the particular policy, but it's usually the case that the policy almost has to be renewed by the insurer, or at least they're prepared to once the policies have been paid for a few years.
Steve, this is not legal advice. This is just me speaking. I would suggest you go back, read the fine print. I would think that sort of ordeal would be one that is material and they'd want to know about. As to what reaction they make because of that, I can't tell you. I wouldn't know, but your best bet would be to read the fine print in your policy. I think that full and open disclosure is always the best way. Otherwise, insurance sometimes they can wriggle out of it, I guess. So this is my advice, not legal advice. I'd encourage you to get your own, would be that probably, yes, you'd have to disclose it, but you can take that in whichever direction that you like. Thank you very much for calling into the program. Kevin, you're up next. We're speaking with Jeff Potter from Friedman, Lurie, Singh & D'Angelo Lawyers, 9221882. We're talking about personal injury, medical negligence primarily. Give us a call if you've got a question for Jeff Potter.